Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Kennedy Profession here on the Crusade Channel. This is the last live radio station standing. This is the show where we make sense of a lawless world using the natural law. It's a beautiful, snowy, wet snow, late fall day, mix of golden leaves still hanging on the trees outside my window, the big oaks. There's some chestnut or walnut trees as well, excuse me, and nice green grass, hasn't gone brown yet. And there's nice snowflakes falling. It's a pretty picturesque scene here down in southwestern Ontario. Somewhere near Lake Huron, which narrows it down to a place the size of Western Europe. We've got a special show for you today. We've got it action-packed with guests. Before I continue, though, I always forget. Rookie mistake. As Mr. Church would say to me, rookie, I always forget to do my promotions. I've been getting emails from people since I started going public with my ideas and views, etc., on podcasts and now on radio, about what books I like to read. I like to pretend that I'm smart by telling you things I've learned on Wikipedia. No. But I've read, you know, a little bit of things, a few books, and one of my favorite books to this day, still my favorite book, to be honest, my favorite nonfiction, let's put it that way, is The Everlasting Man by G.K. Chesterton. You can find that at shop.mikechurch.com. One of my other favorite pastimes is to drink coffee. I make sure I only have two or three pots of coffee a day. Don't want to overdo it. And it's hard to get better coffee than what is available in the Founders Trading Post. Go to shop.mikechurch.com. And finally, if you have a beard, it's the winter and it gets dry and cold. And if you're not careful, your beard will get weird. You got to go to shop.mikechurch.com/glory, glory and shine. Grooming products for both men and women. Women have used their products as well, and they've told me they like them very much. And I know they've been highly vetted and reviewed by Catholic men, especially the bearded among us. You don't have to have a beard in order to be a good man, but it certainly helps. Go to shop.mikechurch.com/glory. Okay, in just a second here, we're going to bring on my friend Mike from RTF. I'm not sure if he's called in the station yet, but I know that he's calling in. And but before we do, we got to talk about something very important that's going to frame our conversation. So you might have heard Father Jackson. He is a priest in the Fraternal Society of St. Peter, traditional priest from the Northeast. He is now part of an investigation, legal proceedings, etc., that have to do with allegations of sexual abuse. Now, we have seen this so far in the church. We've seen this many times. Often, it's sadly true. We find out that there are skeletons in the closet and there is a priest from some time and some place who did something that was very wrong to a child or young person or something. And just so we're clear about my opinion on the Father Jackson case that's going on right now, I have no opinion on it. I have not done any research at all. But I greatly trust my friend Mike from RTF. On these things, and he is convinced of a particular opinion and wants to share that with us. And well, at the end of the day, all that matters is the truth. There is nothing else when it comes to these things except for the truth that matters. Nothing else. The problem with, and this is, you know, this has been one of the problems with dealing with sexual abuse claims for a long time, and it's not just in the church. Look at the statistics about how high sexual abuse is in public schools and things. It's actually higher percentage-wise. It should be none. No one's saying, oh, look, it's less in public schools, therefore it's fine. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying we know that the leftist media loves to go on an anti-Catholic tip and exalt it to the highest possible evil in the history of mankind as if the only place with sin is the Catholic Church. We know that. That does not excuse any of the actual things. And just before I bring my guest on here, I just want to make sure that everyone's clear that if Father Jackson is innocent, his reputation has already been destroyed because people will condemn him in the court of public opinion until the day he dies. It's a very grave matter dealing with sexual abuse. It's uncomfortable to talk about. It's a very, very, very grave matter. I used to coach a lot of rugby, as I've said many times, and I coached a girls' team. And I can tell you, I was watching a basketball coach, a male basketball coach, and he was coaching as part of some summer training a young lady who was getting ready for her basketball season. and they were doing, she was a forward, okay? So they were down in the paint, if you know anything about basketball, under the basket. She was a tall girl. And he was teaching her things. He actually became a really successful university coach, really, really reputable guy. Totally good guy, not a pervert, no problems at all. There would be no reason to ever expect that. He was a great teacher. He was well-respected. But when he was coaching girls, because he had to teach things down under the paint, he would actually wear, if you've ever seen them, focus mitts for boxing, the mitts that you punch, okay? And he put them on his hands, and it was a defense mechanism that no one can ever say I've ever touched someone inappropriately because I literally have mitts on my hands, okay? This is the world that we live in. Accusations can be extremely severe, okay? So we need to make sure that they're true, and we live in a culture of Me Too, etc., where we're willing to believe everyone who claims to be a victim without actually thinking about it. So without further ado, I'm not going to talk as much. I'm going to bring on my friend Mike. Mike, how you doing? Oh, is Mike on? I can't hear him. Is there a... Oh, 1 second. We got technical difficulties here. Sorry for that, folks. So we're going to have Mike on to talk about... what's going on with Father Jackson. And we need to make sure that the truth comes out over everything. And Mike has done a lot of investigation into this. And he's going to make sure that we know exactly what's happening. Justin, you just let me know when he's on. As I was saying, I used to coach a lot of sports. And I can tell you, there were coaches that would be accused of something just in the community.
Anybody on?
Hey, Mike, there you are. Can you hear me, Mike? We seem to be having an issue. That's all right. I'll sort it out. Anyway, I used to coach a lot of sports, and if a coach would be accused of something, let's say, even if it wasn't true, and everyone knew that it wasn't true, there was no way he was ever going to be able to coach in that milieu again. Okay, so this is something we have to be extremely cautious of. I can hear you guys in my headphones, guys. I just I can't hear Mike from RTF. So I'm not sure what's going on there. In any case, so Father Jackson is a priest in the Fraternal Society of St. Peter, and he's been accused of some very heinous crimes that have to do with basically pornography. Okay. Mike from RTF has actually launched. Mike from RTF has actually launched a fundraiser to help find the truth of the matter. So he's been looking into this very deeply. Just bear with us here, ladies and gentlemen. We're just trying to figure out this technical difficulty. We apologize. Sometimes these things happen. It's very complicated to run a radio technological thing because lots of moving parts, trying to get people from all over the country, etc. Again, we're waiting for Mike from RTF to come on here. Hey, do you hear me now? All right, so I can hear Mike from RTF. And he just hung up. In any case, I'm extending my knowledge here on this case because I was waiting for Mike to be able to come on and tell me. We'll just tell him to call in. I'm just going to just quickly send him a message here. Maybe this is... basically the gremlins trying to stop us from actually having somebody on to say something useful.
The gremlins are here. The gremlins
are
arrived.
Oh, you're here. You're here. Okay. Can you hear me, Mike?
I got you.
Oh, goodness gracious. I almost swore. This is it's not censored, but it's still family friendly. Okay. All right. See, this is one of those things as a radio host, when you know you have a guest, you go, sweet, I don't have to think about certain things. And I'm like, oh, I've got a riff now about this thing that I have been waiting to hear from you about. Okay. Better late than never, but you're going to be able to stay after the second half, correct? Like after the break?
Let's do it.
Okay. Okay. You got 8 minutes before the break, 7 minutes. Tell us what has happened so we can go from there.
Father James Jackson is one of the most famous priests of the Fraternity of St. Peter. He's the author of the renowned book called Nothing Superfluous.
Okay.
He's one of the gray hairs in the fraternity, an order that is marked by, you know, many young priests. He's one of the elders, not quite a co-founder of the order, but certainly was one of the first American priests to join up. He was pastor of a large parish in Denver for 15 years, which is 1 year past the constitution of the FSSP, and so he had to be transferred. And he was transferred to Rhode Island, Providence, the diocese where, you know, supposedly the good Bishop Tobin is there. And he's been there for like 2 months, 3 months, and we learned that on either October 31st or November 1st, he was arrested. He was arrested by state police for possession of lewd photographs of underage people.
Oh, wow.
And then he was released on bond. He made his bail a couple days after, you know, I think it sounds like somebody anonymously made his bail for him. He was recently arrested again, I think yesterday, and brought into federal, now a federal case, and there are federal charges being pressed against him. He was released. The Department of Justice has released a statement on their, the Rhode Island DOJ district attorney has released a statement saying that he came in, he pled, he's out. He's out. He's not sent back to jail. There was no bond required. We don't know. Here's what's so fascinating, Kennedy. Mm-hmm. Church Militant is jumping up and down. They're doing backflips. They're besides themselves because they don't know definitively that the man has pled either guilty or not guilty. Mm-hmm. But what we do know is that the man was released without bond and allowed to go home. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they put an electronic monitor on him, an ankle monitor. But it said in the news release, and I don't know where he is now. I have no idea. I don't have any contact with Father Jackson. But it said in the publicly available information that he was headed to Kansas to stay with his relatives somewhere in the state of Kansas. So, you know, to me, I see someone who, you know, was sent many states away. And this will be an ongoing thing. That's the core of what we know. In addition to there was an affidavit, and I don't know, you know, I don't know if you want to go into the affidavit, and I think we can talk about the relative.
I know that it's gory or graphic. We can talk about things without saying the words. Okay.
Yeah. I won't scandalize your audience, but essentially, the affidavit is a sworn document. That Church Militant obtained from the arresting officer, who's a state police, Rhode Island state police person. The arresting officer was a Department of Homeland Security federal officer who was working with a state police officer of Rhode Island State Police. Okay. Basically, here are the facts, according to the affidavit, what the affidavit says. It says that there were three instances in which an IP address linked to the rectory of the parish there in Rhode Island. There are three instances where data was being transferred which contained this despicable information. That provided the officers with probable cause, and so they went out and got a warrant. And here's what the affidavit actually says. They showed up to the place. They found Father standing outside. He was the first person that they found on scene, and so they questioned him. He asked for an attorney, and so they arrested him. They then, within the premises, somewhere within this office slash church office slash rectory slash we don't really know, found a 2 terabyte hard drive that did in fact contain this despicable material. So that's all that the affidavit says. What it doesn't say is who was logged into the machine, who was accessing the information, who had access to the rectory, who else lived there, was anybody else questioned who lived there. You read the affidavit. It's disgusting. It's despicable. I don't recommend reading it. But if you just look at the timeline of events that happens, it appears as though they're like, oh, hey, let's just arrest the first guy that we see, you know?
Yeah.
And I, you know, I mean, that's all we have to go off of right now.
Well, and I would concur saying, well, listen, and this is just, I'm just thinking from a perspective of looking at it logically here. When there are grievous claims made, then the police just have to react to those. This is one of the things that's the hardest job of being a cop is somebody says so-and-so is abusing his children or so-and-so is beating his wife or something. You have to go investigate it. You have to. That's, I mean, if, you know, we don't want to have the boy who cried wolf and it's not true, but it might be true. So you have to go. Now, if you find something there that seems to fit the crime, then just your first reaction is, well, this might be true. Because that's what you have to at least consider the option. Because the last thing you want to do is actually be in the midst of a criminal and let him go. But it seems reasonable enough to suggest that if he, in fact, seemed like a danger and that it did fit the situation, that they wouldn't have let him go. Or they would have at least kept him close. Because once you allow someone, I mean, I guess it's federal, you can go to a different state, but they've basically said you can go and be somewhere else. It seems to me like they are going to be asking a lot of different questions as well. And it doesn't seem like this is a smoking gun in their opinion, even though the media could make it seem as such. Ladies and gentlemen, we have to go to break here in just a second. We have Mike from RTF on the phone and on Skype. And we're talking about the curious and very sad case of Father Jackson, Fraternal Society of St. Peter Priest. Doesn't sit right. Seems like there are a lot of holes in the story. And all that we want to know is the truth. We'll be back to talk about it more after the break. This is Kennedy Hall on the Kennedy Profession. This is the Crusade Channel, the last live radio station standing. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Kennedy Profession here on the Crusade Channel. This is the last live radio station standing. We have got my friend Mike from RTF on here, and we are discussing the curious and very sad case. Sad in either way. It's Mike's contention that he's innocent, and he seems pretty convincing that Father Jackson is innocent. So on that perspective, it's very sad if this is a false accusation and it's a plant and all that sort of stuff, because, wow, what a terrible way to ruin a man's life. Who seems like, I've never heard of him before, but he seems like he's a very good priest and has been fighting for the true and Orthodox Catholic faith for years now, so God bless him. On the other hand, obviously, there's always the chance somebody's guilty, and then that's sad for those reasons. But it's Mike's contention that he's innocent. He's making a very good case. And if you're just joining us now, the details basically are that Father Jackson, somebody called the police suggesting that he had some sort of explicit images and videos. Was it images or just videos or both, Mike?
Yeah, there were images, there were videos. You know, they're of an absolute obscene, absurd, despicable nature. Yeah. I should clarify too. I'm not necessarily here to proclaim Father Jackson's innocence. In fact, I really would like to strike a healthy balance between just looking at the facts of the case, what the government has presented, and then, you know, presuming the innocence of someone until he is proven beyond the reasonable doubt to be guilty. And I think that, you know, to be honest, Kennedy, I think Catholics should prepare themselves I would describe it as an improbable possibility, but they should prepare themselves for the improbable possibility that he may, in fact, not be innocent.
Yes, that's true. And, you know, this reminds me of the situation with the Society of St. Pius X, all the accusations, et cetera, that came up with last year and a bit. And some of them were true, or some of them were at least partially true. I was talking to someone who was required to do a massive deep dive into it. And people have criticized the Society's response to it. They said, you basically haven't said enough. But talking to Society priests, it was basically, you know, maybe this is something we should discuss. I am at the point now where I think that it's not proper. I should put it this way. I don't know if it's proper for us in the sort of Catholic media sphere to take the Church Militant approach. Now, I got to calibrate that a little bit, because obviously if something just becomes known and it's out there, then it's just news. And then that's just a matter of reporting the news. That's just sort of something that always happens. But if you're wrong, hypothetically, not you, but if someone's wrong about an accusation, the person is destroyed no matter what. It's yeah. it's almost impossible. So it's almost like, you know, think about the accusations that were made about certain Society priests. I know for a fact that many of them were false. I've actually seen the evidence. I can scout's honor, you know, hand on the Bible, that sort of thing. Dewey Reams. And I can attest that someone did a deep dive and talked to the people and the witnesses and things, and some of them were fabrications. And Church Milton never retracted some of those. I know that for a fact. That being said, in any case, if anyone knows anyone who has ever experienced abuse from anyone for any reason whatsoever, it doesn't help them when it becomes a big story. That does not help the person feel better. There's a reason why people who are abused, largely speaking, don't want anyone to know about it, because it's not something they want to talk about for obvious reasons. You're a military man, Mike. Men who come back from having a traumatic experience overseas, they often don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, and they shouldn't. A lot of them keep it, you know, bottled up for their entire lives. Spend, you know, their subconscious is processing the information, you know, for years and decades from what they've experienced. And I think it's the same post-traumatic stress that abuse victims feel as well. And I think that this is really a good balance that we're trying to strike here on this mm-hmm. on this particular topic, Kennedy. And it does relate to the various alleged scandals in the SSPX as well and mm-hmm. throughout the church. Suppose he's innocent and he's accused. Well, he'll be a scarred priest forever.
That's right.
He'll be benched. He'll be disfigured. He won't be in service, in active service, in any diocese in the whole country because of the accusation. Suppose that he is guilty. And people then come back and review the tapes, and they hear you and I, you know, and wringing our hands over, you know, his reputation ahead of the, you know, the fact that this is a despicable crime. Somebody is committing this crime. Mm-hmm. Somebody is producing these pieces of illegal filth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're sharing them. We ought to have the appropriate level of empathy here for victims of child abuse.
Yes.
Yeah. Now here's what's so hard in defending a priest in 2021 USSA. I first went out and started a GoFundMe, not necessarily to exonerate Father Jackson, which I hope it does. I truly do. I hope it does. I pray.
Of course.
I now pray for that every day. But we live in an age of Comey. We live in an age of Hillary Clinton. Hillary mm-hmm. Clinton wasn't ever arrested for any of her crimes. There's mm-hmm. political policing happening all the time. You and I are aware of cases in which priests had police planting evidence on them, and then mm-hmm. those priests were later exonerated. So it's not outside of the realm of possibilities that this is a setup. And because we can't be certain of it, and because this is such a high profile target, I believe that we have a duty to take action ourselves and put a second set of eyes on the evidence. So I went out, I started a GoFundMe last night in 4 hours, raised $60,000. And I was very clear. the purpose of the fundraise is to hire a private investigator to do, you know, to do forensic computing and to try to look at, review the evidence. Oh, and also, you know, if father needs a lawyer, pay for his lawyer. I woke up this morning to, you know, GoFundMe having deleted the fundraise after, you know, again, 60,000 was the last time I looked at it. Maybe it raised more than that. Who knows? They say that they're going to give everybody their money back in 5 to 10 business days. Great. You know, are you going to give them interest for holding their money that long? But you know, I was so careful, Kennedy, to word the raise in such a way as to avoid any of the, you know, algorithms that they have. If this were a case of a minority in the United States who was on fentanyl, who was accused of a violent crime, I'm sure that GoFundMe would allow me to raise $1 million for that person.
But wait, I think I've heard of something like that before. I think that happened. Didn't that happen one time? It was a Midwestern state, I think.
I don't know. It's just a random example. But because you're trying to defend a Catholic priest, you know, the big brother won't let you do it. So that got shut down. I think that is, you know, I think that's a really telling thing too. You know, you're not allowed today to defend priests. They are presumed guilty. And this speaks to how you open the segment up with how Catholic media are reacting to this. Unfortunately, some prominent members of Catholic media are presuming guilt, based on just reading the affidavit. My description of the affidavit to you, I'm sure you'll read it eventually and maybe you'll come up with a similar conclusion. My reading of the affidavit is that the material is shocking and disgusting and despicable, but I'm not sure that it proves anything.
Yeah, this is you know, it's funny. I think back to there were some famous Hollywood movies that dealt with this issue, and so did even that show Law and Order Special Victims Unit. I mean, I think it's gone woke now. I mean, everything has gone woke on TV. But I actually remember they did an episode specifically about priests. And classic Hollywood show, you know, these Hollywood shows, they always have to have priests in them somehow because they know that Catholicism is the best aesthetic and it provides some sort of moral authority to a story. Because everyone recognizes the kingship of Christ, whether they admit it or not. But that's a whole other story. But there was an episode about priests and... The controversy was basically there was a priest that it seemed like it was him, and everyone assumed it was, but it just wasn't him. And it just kind of went through this whole thing, and it was to do with the whole priest scandal and stuff. And it just showed the messiness of dealing with sexual abuse allegations because, again, I've seen this. I've seen this with coaches where... basically they did nothing wrong, but somebody made a claim that they did. And by the time it gets through all of the text messages and the soccer moms and so forth, he's done and he can never coach again in that community, even if he's exonerated, because people will doubt the decision no matter what the decision is. They'll doubt it no matter what the decision is, because even if he gets exonerated, they'll say, well, this is a classic case of, you know, the patriarchy protecting a male, white male or something. You know, like they'll find a reason why he's not. Yeah. And no matter what happens is this is happening to Father Jackson.
Yeah, that's right. And now there are things about this is the type of show where you can actually make the moral argument. And your audience will understand what the moral argument is. The argument about the moral man. And the fact of the matter is that a man who lives a regimented life marked by scrupulous acts of temperance and prudence, the man who rises at the same time and who is very diligent with his prayers, who is not secretive about technology, in fact has no attachment to it and probably little understanding of it, you know, the man who has a sterling reputation and for 15 years operates in the Archdiocese of Denver, he was elected by his brother priests, the Novus Ordo priests, to the deanery, to lead the deanery. Here's this priest of the Fraternity of St. Peter being elected and trusted by all the priests in the Archdiocese of Denver. That type of man may tell a lie. He may even steal. He may commit an act of violence. He's not going to do something like this without warning signs. And yeah. I don't know the guy. You mm-hmm. don't know him.
I don't know him.
But what I know about the types of people that are coming out now, priests, religious, lay, who have known him for 20, 30, 40 years, who say that I've been in close contact with him. This is totally inconsistent with him. There are no warning signs. You know, in some cases, certain guys who are engaged in this kind of stuff, they do give off the heebie-jeebies. They give you creeps. There are warning signs. They're secretive about their technology. They have hidden hard drives. They have a hidden life. You know, they make off-brand comments and whatever. Mm-hmm. I have really not encountered anyone who can credibly say that any of those things, that any of those warning signs exist in this context. And so, you know, you look at it and you say, well, okay, he's a very famous priest. It would be devastating to the traditional movement to take him down. He's in a brand new archdiocese or diocese, you know, behind enemy lines with no friends. He's in a period of transition. You know, and you just go on and on and on. And then you say, well, we, at least to your point, we will never believe what the jury says in this case. Until we see the evidence for ourselves. If they, it doesn't matter what happens in this case, the good people of Denver and the good people of Providence are not going to believe. If a jury convicts him, they will never believe that he's guilty unless we find out for ourselves that he, that, you know, and corroborate that by looking at the evidence. And I just think as a matter of justice, we need to do that ourselves.
Yeah, and as you say that, it's making me think, you know, so this is, you know, it's kind of like this has happened. You know, it reminds me of when I had to accept, this is not, it doesn't seem related, but there's a point here. Well, I had to accept that coronavirus communism had arrived. It was, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 months in, and I had to go, okay, this is here, you know, and I can kick and scream all I want. For some reason, this is happening, and now we're going to suffer. And, you know, we've been talking for the last year and a half. I've been losing my mind some days living up here in Trudopia. And it hasn't been easy. Now, the reason I'm saying that in regards to the situation is this has happened to Father Jackson. He's either innocent or he's guilty. No matter what the verdict is, though, this situation has now happened and it will not go away. So, for some reason, now he is either being brought to justice, God forbid that he actually did these crimes, or this is something that God is allowing to happen to a priest that everyone suggests is that states is a holy priest, and there are reasons for that, just like there are reasons why things like this happen to our Lord. So, the most important thing in this is going to be the truth. If he suffers the consequences of actually having done these terrible things, then that's a matter of justice. If he suffers the, let's call it sort of white martyrdom of being accused but being innocent, for the sake of justice, the truth still has to come out. You see what I'm saying? So we now need to pray and advocate for nothing but the truth, because no matter what the verdict is, the truth is the most important thing. And I think that's what you're attempting to do.
Yeah, I mean, in that as lovers of the truth, as faithful Catholics, you know, I don't care what mass you go to, as a Catholic, by definition, you have to love the truth. The second person of the Blessed Trinity is the truth. You know, so I am fully prepared, Kennedy, as of, you know, on today, the 4th of November, to discover the fact that the unpleasant fact that Father Jackson did in fact commit this crime.
Yep.
I am prepared for him to plead guilty. I am prepared for him to say, I did it, and I'm sorry. I'm prepared for that reality. I don't think that is the reality. I don't happen to think that is the most likely outcome here. But the most important thing, as you said, is that we get to the bottom of what happened, and the only way we can do it is if we do it ourselves. We have lost any of the special trust and confidence we have ever had with our federal police force in these mm-hmm. United States. And consequently to that, when a priest with an immaculate and sterling record is accused of something so absurd, so crazy, then we can't trust but verify. We distrust but verify. I think that's maybe that's the slogan.
Hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. The bit about not being able to trust the police, that's true. Sadly, you know, I had to deal with the police. One of the team, I won't give away the details too much, but basically one of the teams that I was coaching, one of the opponent teams that was traveling actually from out west, from British Columbia, they were visiting for a tournament. We beat them, and they were some private school, and they were all upset that we beat them. And they actually told the police, they called the police, the coach did, that our team was hurling racial slurs or something like that at their team. Because they had, our team just happened to be, I think, but most of the girls were white. It's a small town in rural Ontario. It just kind of happens to be that way. And this team was from out west where it's a lot more diverse in Vancouver, etc. Anyway, that team had a lot of brown girls on it. Ours didn't. Doesn't matter. Who cares? So for some reason, someone decided to say that our team was racist. So we had to sit down, I remember, in a meeting with a police officer and the principal, and our season was threatened and all this sorts of stuff, and the girls were losing it. And, at one point the cop literally said, well, why would they say it if it wasn't true? Like he did. And the girls though, and like, I don't know how conservative or woke in the good sense that these girls were, but they just were like, are you kidding me? That's the thing now, is people lie. And, you know, they didn't say, hey, Jesse Smollett, whatever. They just said, are you kidding me? Like they immediately lost it and went, you can't actually be serious that you don't think someone who had sour grapes after losing and being supposed to be the team that's going to, you know, win, etc. You can't actually be serious if you think that they would not have a reason to lie about something. Well, the truth did come out, and it turned out that there was an altercation with some fan that didn't even go to our school, and one of the girls on the team, and I don't know. So that had nothing to do with our team. So false accusations, they happen in all aspects of life. And on the other hand, though, I know of a story, Jesse Romero, you know, people probably know him as a famous Catholic apologist. He actually tells a story about a priest that he knew who he was very close with. And basically, like, he was so close with this priest, he would just stop by his house. He could walk into his fridge and grab a beer. You know, they were just friends. And fast forward, this priest falls extremely ill and the priest has AIDS. And Jesse looks at him. He's told the story publicly. And the priest kind of looked at him like, yeah, I've got AIDS. And it was just like, oh my goodness, you're kidding me. You've had a double life this whole time. Now, Jesse has a very heroic story where he basically almost, I don't want to say beat the guy to death, but he like implored him very strongly to make sure that he went to confession. And he was like, you're going to burn in hell a lot, you know. And it ended up being a very inspiring story about even this priest who had this double life ended up dying in a state of grace, and thanks be to God. But the point is that Jesse was completely shocked by it. Now, I will say, though, just from my limited experience being around the traditional movement, traditional priests and the Novus Ordo, traditional orders are really strong on accountability. You don't ever live by yourself. You don't ever stay around mixed company or minors without somebody else there. There's a regimented prayer life. There's a regimented life of discipline. And also, they're extremely careful. Doesn't mean that Judas can't get in. Judas can get in anywhere, okay? The snake can get in the garden. But they're extremely careful about who's allowed in the seminary. And they're very strict on sexual sins before you're even allowed to go in the first place. So the odds are that this happening in an order such as the FSSP in today's world are very slim if they happen.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a non-emotional argument that you're making based on experience and based on the rules that are in place in between, you know. And again, folks like Church Militant, who sadly have, especially Christine Niles, who has condemned this man. Mm-hmm. You know, she's running around Twitter saying that, you know, you know, trads are quick to condemn Novus Ordo, but they're quick to defend, you know, traditionalists, and it's a double standard. Well, yeah. But there are actually differences, though, you know, and you have actually, you've pointed them out. You've articulated them. This is why, you know, outlets like the Crusade Channel being independent, being live, and being accessible to everybody and out from under the thumb of Opus Dei and EWTN, you know, being independent is so important because, you know, I was contacted by CNA. CNA is a subsidiary, yep, Catholic News Agency, subsidiary, yep, of EWTN. EWTN is controlled by Opus Dei. You know, they're the parent company of Sophia. Sophia is the parent company of Crisis. Crisis is the parent company of 1 Peter 5. You know, you start looking at the sort of incestuous relationships in big Catholic media, and you realize that
Hello.
Hey, did Mike cut out there? I think you put in, I think you guys crossed some wires there. Who do I have on the line here? Oh, okay. Sorry, fellas. Mike was making a really good point there. And so we apologize, guys, for the technical details today. It's just one of those days. This is probably because we're telling the truth. That's why this is happening. This always happens. I can tell you, you know, being in Catholic media and stuff for just a little while now, when you start to tell the truth about things that are really controversial, you encounter technical difficulties. Mike's back. So, Mike, you're making a really good point there. Sorry you got kicked off.
No, it's just... It's yeah, I mean, it's probably the devil not wanting us to talk about this, but the fact that you're independent, the fact that you have the ability to say, to discuss this honestly, brutally, soberly, and say, I don't think that it happened, but it may have happened, and we need to get to the bottom of it. You know, the fact of the matter is that the U.S. government has a 99% success rate on convicting people who they arrest for this particular crime. So the chances that he's going to be convicted are pretty high. Yeah. And they probably would not have arrested him if they didn't think they had a slam dunk case. At the same time, you know, if buried one level beneath that number, the 99% number is a scary number, but a very high percentage of that includes plea bargains. We don't know whether or not a 66-year-old man is going to take a deal for a shorter sentence, or, you know, we just don't know what's going to happen. Either way, this is scandal. This is a shockwave, and we need to keep our wits about us and deal with this like men, and not be scared off by this, not be deterred from tradition, not be afraid of where the facts may ultimately lead us.
And last thing before I let you go here, we also have to be. We have to be willing to say to ourselves, we're not going to jump on any bandwagon against any particular group of priests or faithful, because that's just stupid. We may as well condemn Jesus Christ because he let Judas in. Okay, that's just dumb. So when people do that, they need to check themselves, because it's one of the most, and that's why it bugs me, one of the most harmful things that you can do in Catholic media is start to jump onto the sort of secular Dateline news way of doing things, because you just cause more harm than good. Mike, thanks for joining us. One last question before you go. I know you were tweeting about buffalo wings earlier. I had some grilled cheese dipped into a blue cheese dip for lunch. Is that the same thing?
Well, blue cheese dip is the only way to have. I was outed as an out of towner because the first time I ordered chicken wings, you just call them
you
chicken
said
wings
ranch.
In Buffalo.
You did ranch.
I asked for ranch. They said, "Oh, well, yeah, we know." First of all, you don't even order buffalo. You don't call them buffalo wings. You just call them chicken wings when you're in Buffalo, because of course you're in Buffalo, so chicken
That's
wings
right.
ergo are a buffalo wing.
All right, thank you, Mike. I've got to kick you off right now. I hear the music, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back after the break. This is the Crusade Channel, last live radio station standing. Ladies and gentlemen, listening to the Kennedy Profession here on the Crusade Channel. This is the last live radio station standing. We're going to talk about, I'm a totally a good news guy, and I try my best. I promise I'll have the second half of the last hour, the last live hour, I should say, because we're still on with some best of, from 5 to 6 Eastern Standard Time in about 52 minutes. But for the second half of the last live hour, I will make sure that I bring it around for something positive. But there is another story we've got to talk about. It's a tad bit negative. And it has to do with a Catholic university, ostensibly a Catholic university, that is sadly not operating the way you would hope a Catholic university to operate. And basically, they're in effect doing a fundraiser for Planned Parenthood. I'm just going to read a couple of highlight points here, bring our guest on. There is a university in California called Loyola Marymount University. And they're holding a Planned Parenthood fundraiser on campus on November the 5th. And it says pro-life students at the Jesuit-run Loyola Marymount University in California say they will protest on Friday against the administration's decision to allow Planned Parenthood fundraiser to proceed on campus. The chairman of LMU's College Republicans, William Donahue, told LifeSite News that the administration of the Jesuit University don't really care that Catholic students and alumni are frustrated with their decision to allow the feminist LMU Women in Politics group run a Planned Parenthood fundraiser. So basically what's happening here, it seems like there is a group of feminists that are doing something to support the destruction of unborn human life, and they're looking to raise funds by doing so at a Catholic university in the state of Crazy Fornia. Alejandro, have I got the Coles notes correct?
Yes, you have it absolutely correct. Basically, this is... the Catholic University, it's run by Jesuits, so it's about as Catholic as you can imagine being at a Jesuit university. So, but, you know, obviously you're going to get a lot of hypocrites anyways, but basically it's a fundraiser to, and Planned Parenthood representatives will be there to speak at this event. And Women in Politics are just trying to get funding for Planned Parenthood and funding for contraception and abortion, and effectively. So yes, you have it right.
Okay. So now, is this a event run by the university, or is it there's some sort of campus club and they're allowing it to go forward?
Basically, campus club. The university is not necessarily sponsoring it, but they are permitting it to happen on. At the dining hall, Rusty's Dining Hall. So they are permitting it, which is probably just as bad.
Okay. So this university is run by Jesuits.
Yes.
Is Loyola known for being a decent university? Like, is this surprising, or is this kind of like run for, par for the course at this place?
Well, I mean, it's not surprising, honestly, because any Catholic university is basically Catholic by name, but not really in practice. I mean, it wasn't really surprising to me, but this is like the breaking point for a lot of students here at Loyola, and they just actually started fighting back. They've been trying to do campaigns called like Renew LMU and try to restore the Catholic heritage and the Catholic principles that were founded by the original Jesuits that founded the university, but now it's just getting worse and worse. And they're actually, I spoke to Will and he told me that they actually had a lot of students leave over this, and it's getting crazy. And a lot of people are starting to pull funding. So they just said, okay, enough is enough. They're destroying this place. And if they keep going down this route, we just can't support it anymore.
I mean, I imagine it's a co-ed school because they have a women's group. Is it like a school that offers a seminary, or is it just a basic Catholic college?
Not exactly a seminary. It's a basic Catholic university. What I do know is that if you work for a diocese, then they will pay for your schooling if you're going to be working for them. I suppose the seminarians could study there, but I don't think it's necessarily a seminary. So,
You know, I went to a Catholic college, a Catholic in name only. It's called King's College. And it's actually attached to the one of the only remaining diocesan seminaries in Canada, actually. And there was a priest there who was head of liturgy for the diocese. And he was a professor of liturgy at the seminary, and he was chaplain of the college. And he invited James Martin to speak virtually. And the diocese, to their credit, they said he can't speak on the Catholic property. So what he did is he went to the public library downtown and rented a... He rented some sort of hall, probably with money from the budget that he had from the diocese, ironically. Wow. And he had James Martin do it off-site because he believed it was important. He also ran a like an ecumenical club, you know. And in fairness, at this campus, it was a Catholic campus, but it was part of a major university that was not Catholic, so it was like a satellite campus. Mm-hmm. And in fairness to him, there was a problem with, because the school basically had a lot of kids that came from Israel and a lot of kids that came from Palestine and other parts of the Middle East. So there were sort of like conflicts, obviously. So they had a club where these kind of people from different countries would get together and try to hash it out. But it was, at root, it was basically like a religious indifferentism club. Because what they would do is they would just basically talk about whatever, and then some would convert to the different religions and they'd leave Catholicism, and he was like, it's all good because Abrahamic faith or whatever. So that's my experience with a Catholic college. It sounds like this place is probably isn't that much different.
No, it's not that much different. And I could tell you, I mean, my very first impression of a Catholic university was the University of Notre Dame. And I was around when Obama actually, former President Barack Obama of the United States, when he flew in and decided to give a speech there, and he was actually given a baccalaureate degree for showing up. And the terrible thing about it was this guy was pro-abortion, and he's actively advocating for this kind of stuff and his presidency. And Father Jenkins, the president at the time, invited him to come speak at the graduation. This is my sister's graduation, that is, and it was just insane. And we were just infuriated, and students got together and they put together ND response. A group to just kind of combat this event, and they had an outpouring of students who fought against this, alumni and current students alike, and it was a great turnout, but they insisted on doing it anyways. So I don't think that this event at Loyola Marymount is going to get canceled. I mean, they've already had an attempt to try to shut it down, and it didn't work, and the president told them that they were going to move forward with it anyways. And so they're organizing a protest now to take place tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. at Loyola Marymount. It's that's Pacific time, and you know they're going to try to stand outside, pray the rosary, and just protest the event. It's because it's terrible. I mean, we're Catholics, right? I mean, we're not supposed to be supporting the murder of the unborn, and you know, here they are doing it. So
that's crazy. Well, you went down and interviewed one of the students or a group of them. Can you tell us about your experience?
Okay, yeah. So I met with Will Donahue. He was just the one student, and he is the chapter president for Loyola Marymount, and he's also the state chairman for the California College Republicans. So he was the one who's organizing the protest for tomorrow, and he explained to me everything that's going on at Loyola Marymount. It's terrible, really, the stuff that they're going through. They literally have a Muslim professor as chair of the theology department.
And oh, great.
And if you can't get any more anti-Catholic than that, I mean, honestly, a Muslim.
Well, especially from a theology, I mean, it's not like he's the head of economics and he's talking about, like, you know, inflation or something. This guy's actually teaching theology.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, it's so absurd to say that that wasn't political. I mean, because that was obviously to get some more money from different supporters. Obviously, the liberal base of the donors, perhaps, but, you know, because it is a private school. And another thing that Will told me about is that they, you know, they didn't even have, like, crucifixes inside the department buildings. All of them were removed. The only place you can find a crucifix, really, is if you go inside the chapel. It's
probably not even that pronounced there. You know, famous Catholic philosopher Peter Kraft. Mm-hmm. He told a story because he taught at Boston. I think it was it Boston College or Boston University, but anyway,
Boston College.
He taught there, and he's obviously a faithful Catholic, but the university's, you know, continued to secularize throughout his 30, 40 years there, and he's an old man. He's in his mid-80s now. Right. And so he saw a lot of changes, and one of the changes that happened, I think it was in the 1980s or 90s, and basically they would get state funding if they didn't explicitly present all of their courses with some sort of religious motif. So what they ended up doing is they basically took down all the crosses in all the classrooms. And for a long time, they had been teaching stuff that wasn't explicitly Catholic or Christian. They were teaching, you know, whatever, economics, math, science. But they still had crucifixes up because that's what you do when you're Catholic. You put crucifixes in every room. And however, he was teaching a course. It was philosophy of religion, and he had a Muslim student. And one day, the Muslim student raised his hand, and he said he was a very engaged student. And he said, "What's that shadow on the wall?" And it was basically the outline of where the crucifix used to be. And he said, "Well, that was where there was a crucifix." And he says, "Why did you take that down?" And Peter Kraft says, "Anyone of my students want to answer this question?" And some, you know, young lady trying to be all progressive. And she said, "Well, this is because, you know, we didn't want to offend anybody, you know, like everyone's welcome here." And the Muslim guy goes, "That offends me." Peter Kraft is laughing. He's like, "This is great. Why does it offend you?" And the girl was shocked. And he says, "I am from another country. I made the decision to come here. I got on a plane. I filled out paperwork. I signed documents, and I knew that it was a Catholic school. And you thought I would be offended if I saw Catholic things at a Catholic school. How petty do you think I am?" And it's just a great story. He actually ended up taking the young man to Mass, and he had a really amazing story about taking him to a daily Mass because the guy just wanted to go, and he's, "Okay, what's this whole Mass thing?" But he sat there. He sat there very stoic the whole time, and after, he said, "So you think that that piece of bread is God?" And Peter Kraft says, "Well, yes, we do." And he says, "No, you don't." And he goes, "No, we actually do." And he says, "No, you don't." And he says, "What are you talking about?" He says, "If you believed that that was God, you'd never be able to get off your knees when he was in your presence." And anyway, it was a very amazing story. So, you know, it's funny how this university is totally secularized, and it's just different to see the dichotomy between a Muslim interaction at both different schools. So, but tomorrow you're going down for the protest. What's supposed to happen with that?
I'm sorry, say again?
Tomorrow you're going down for the protest. What's supposed to happen with that?
Okay, so basically we're going to deliver the petition. I work for LifeSite News, so yeah. I'm going to deliver our petition to President Snyder and post it outside his office. And Renew LMU had their own letter and asking him to take to stop the event, and so they're gonna post theirs at the office, and we're just gonna stay out there. We're just gonna pray the rosary outside and peacefully gather outside Roski's dining hall where the event is taking place. So
is it gonna be going on while you're there?
I mean, nothing else really. We're hoping that there isn't any violence. They're suspecting there might be because the College Republicans received emails and messages of harassment telling them that they're evil and just all this other stuff. And, you know, they got spat on in their face when they were there. So it was terrible. And I'm not surprised if anything happens, but we're hoping not, but that's, you can kind of run that risk with any protest, right? I mean, if there's any disagreement, they're not civil about it. They're not rational. They're just going to run straight to the more animalistic and immature part of their minds and do really stupid things. But who knows?
We had a gentleman on from Ireland who was part of Tradition Family Property, but over in Ireland, it's called something like the Irish Society for Christian Civilization or something like that. And they were talking about doing their rosary rallies and things, and they have a video of it. And basically, What happens is they have these groups of literal Satanists and whatnot. They come by and they start chanting "Hail Satan" and stuff like that, and it's a whole thing. So hopefully that sort of thing doesn't happen. So, but it's what a witness, though. I mean, this is the thing, guys. You know, yesterday was such a great day. We saw the great victory in Virginia, and that's awesome. And there's great things to come. But then today, we have the hammer come down with you know, this whole fake mandate from Biden that hadn't been actually a mandate, but more was more of a declaration from His Majesty's throne, and never had any paperwork. And then lo and behold, you know, personally, I know they didn't accidentally decide to do it today. They probably had it in their back pocket if there was a big victory, because they knew everyone was watching Virginia. If there was a big victory in Virginia for the Democrats, this would have been sort of like, we won and here you go. Like, there's, you want some more? Here's a second helping. But I think today, after the loss, which they probably weren't expecting because they can't accept that they have any faults, I think they said, it's more of a tantrum. You know, I think it was properly timed. So it is interesting that the battle is intensifying right now, and this seems to be just another example.
Yes.
Yeah. So, well, Alejandro, I'm going to let you go here in a second because I got some other stories that I got to get to. So tomorrow, everyone pray for this protest. Pray that it will be successful. Pray that it will be prayerful. And you know what? I would imagine most of the young ladies who are part of that club, that feminist club, I would imagine most of them are baptized Catholics. So we should all tonight, we pray our rosaries, go to Mass, whatever you do, offer up whatever prayers you're doing for the conversion of those young ladies, because they're young. And I myself was an apathetic kind of pro-choice liberal guy in my early 20s. I was not a practicing Catholic or a conservative. Thanks be to God. God brought me out of my sin, especially through Our Lady of Guadalupe. And that can happen to absolutely anybody. So let's make sure that we offer our prayers of supplication for these young ladies. That was great, Alejandro. I'll talk to you on the Teams chat, I'm sure, about something to do with our other job that we work together. Thanks for coming on, and I will talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you, Kennedy. God bless you. All
right, see you soon. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Alejandro, one of our video correspondents. He's actually the West Coast correspondent now for LifeSight. So that's really interesting. Well, I wanted to bring up Biden's mandate that was... I talked about it about 3 weeks ago on the show. I read that essay from the Brownstone Institute basically saying, like, there's no mandate because there has been no mandate. And I was reading this this mandate earlier, and it's really clear to me that there's something. I mean, when I watched what was it? Oh yeah, when I watched Yuri Bezmenov talk about. If you're not familiar with him, he was a communist defector. He defected and then went to... Actually, died in Canada, actually. He talked about the strategies of the communists. And I've mentioned them before. But he specifically mentioned that they actually use the Art of War. Now, I've never read The Art of War by Sun Tzu. But from what I've read about The Art of War, basically... I don't know if it's actually an evil philosophy. I just think that it's an effective method and is used for evil. I think that's the best way to understand it. Sort of like, I mean, a gun is neither good nor bad. It's just a gun. What you use it for is what makes it good or bad. But the goal of the Art of War is basically to destroy your opponent in a military fashion without having to use any violence. So if you can psychologically destroy them, best case is that you basically surround the city and cut off the resources and show up and, you know, you're standing over top of the enemy sleeping in the middle of their beds with an arrow pointing at their face. And it's like, well, you don't even have to fire it because they're going to surrender. That's kind of the idea. Anyway, communists have implemented the Sun Tzu philosophy. It's very explicit. Yuri Bezmenov said he was a former KGB agent. Well, these are Marxists that we're dealing with. They're trained Marxists. I mean, Black Lives Matter admitted it. They're actual trained Marxists. And this, yeah, it's been the case ever since Saul Alinsky essentially popularized that, and probably before that. There should be no secret here. I mean, Justin Trudeau up in my country is literally probably Fidel Castro's son. Talk about Marxism. so when I look at this whole fake mandate that became a real one, when you read it, friend of the show, Eric Sammons, he tweeted a reply to me, a picture of a part of the actual new mandate. And it basically is going after all of the reactions to it. What I mean by that is they come out with this mandate that never had any legislation and say, we're going to do these 15 different things. Never actually legislated. So all of the red states that are going to fight it, they all go and they put all these lawsuits forward, and they all go and they put out these statements about how we're not going to do this and the other thing. And then just conveniently, after they've basically goaded everybody to come out and say what they were going to do, they come up with a piece of legislation that attacks every single line of defense that they, that the red states proposed they were going to do. It's devilish. It's very cunning. It's very devious. We are dealing with what St. Paul says, a battle between the principalities and dominions. That's exactly what's happening right now. Biden is a bumbling fool, but the preternatural and sulfuric motivation that drives the demon rat presidency, regime change, it is not stupid. This is a lesson for everyone. This is a lesson for everyone. And it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen over the next little bit, because the legal battles about this mandate are just beginning. And I can't see how this is going to be resolved any fast. I can't see how it's not going to take maybe years to figure out the fallout from this. We're in so deep right now. And but the good thing is that the battle's intensifying and good is punching back. For the first time in a while. We're going to talk about that after the break. There's a big story out of Ohio that I just saw. This is the Kennedy Profession on the Crusade Channel. It's snowing like a blizzard outside my window. Glorious day. This is the last live radio station standing.
While in the merry month of May, not from me home, I started.
Ladies and gentlemen, sorry, you couldn't hear me there. That's why he kept playing the music. I'm so sorry. We have just had 1,000 different technical difficulties today. My goodness gracious, you'd think that I was a... Anyway, this is one of those days. One of the problems with doing live radio is that when you're having an off day with your actual skills, well, everyone knows it live. This isn't like working in the office where you just make a mistake and nobody finds out about it. I apologize there. I was wondering why the music kept playing, and it's because my microphone was muted. So that's my fault, and there you go. Rookie mistake. I apologize. Major pro-life legislation coming out of Ohio. Major pro-life stuff happening all over the country. November. If a lot of these things stick, I mean, I know that the Texas heartbeat law is going to be debated, and there's going to be a lot of stuff about that. The battle's just begun in so many ways. I think they've estimated that tens of thousands, or about 10,000 babies have already been saved, though, as a result of that. So that's a win. In any case, major pro-life movement happening in Ohio. The article is entitled, Ohio Republicans introduce a bill to effectively ban all abortions following Texas Heartbeat Act. As the Supreme Court hears challenges to Texas's Heartbeat Act, which bans abortions after a fetal heartbeat can be detected, Ohio Republicans have introduced a bill which goes a step farther than the Texas law, which appears to outlaw almost all abortions regardless of cardiac activity or gestation time. That's a big deal. On Tuesday, GOP lawmakers in Ohio introduced House Bill 480, which defines an unborn child as an individual human being from fertilization until live birth. That's actually a big deal. They didn't just say implantation, they said fertilization. Just as an aside, if that sticks, that would actually make contraception legally a form of abortion. I don't know if you know this, but if you look, I was at a presentation once by a doctor. I should actually get that doctor to call in. He's a personal friend of mine. He's a pro-life Catholic doctor who treated patients for years. He just retired, wanted to get out of the system, thankfully. And he talked about the history of contraception legislation. Contraception was illegal. And one of the reasons was is because it was in the medical textbooks that were standardized and that were used for training doctors in North America was life begins at conception. But they actually changed it to life begins at implantation. If you don't know anything about the way that that happens, essentially there's fertilization. And then there's a next step with implantation. This is why women can have early miscarriages and they don't even know it. Because there can be a implant, there can be a fertilization, an actual human person is created, obviously in a microscopic form. But then there is no implantation on the wall of the uterus. That's as far as I can understand it. So in old legislation, it was illegal to have contraception because it was acknowledged by the medical textbooks that a human life began at conception, but they changed it to implantation. Why did they do that? Well, they did that because they tested, I believe it was in Puerto Rico, they tested, not abortion pills, contraception. And if you don't know how those work, there's this old idea that a contraceptive pill, they'll say it makes your body think it's pregnant. It's not really that simple. Basically, what it does is it flips the hormones at the wrong times of the month. So when it's supposed to be high in estrogen and low in progesterone, relatively, it flips it, vice versa. And that messes with the cycle. And that makes it so your body doesn't think it's pregnant. It's just, it's not functioning properly. I don't remember years ago when the whole Sandra Fluke thing was going on. What did Rush Limbaugh say? Oh, he had a funny line about that. Anyway, when the whole Sandra Fluke thing was going on about whether a Catholic university should provide contraception, etc., there was a Catholic female speaker. And she was on some television show, I can't remember. Basically, people were saying, well, why is Viagra funded by the drug company or the drug plan, but contraception is not? And she said, well, Viagra is for your health and contraception isn't. Now, the thing is, as crude as the whole analogy is, she's actually correct. We won't go too much into details, but if a fella consulted his doctor for reasons that a fella would have to consult his doctor, it's because something's not functioning properly. That's a sign of unhealth. But if a lady consults her doctor and says, I need to stop the normal process, she's actually healthy. And then she's asking the doctor to give her something that won't make her healthy, but actually stops normal function. It really is something, you know, if you think about how complicated an ecosystem is, for example, I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen this video. There's a video that's online. I'm not going to play it because it's mainly visual. But it goes through what happened in Yellowstone Park. And there was a time when they basically hunted all the wolves away. Well, fast forward a decade or so. And they were having major issues with water levels. Rivers were basically disappearing. Riverbanks were breaking. Vegetation was dying, so on and so forth. And basically they realized the problem was they took away the wolves. That was actually the issue. The issue was that they took away the wolves. How does that work? Well, the herbivore and omnivore species had no natural predator, mainly the deer and larger deer-like animals. And they spent an inordinate, the main thing was, is they spent an inordinate amount of time on the riverbanks and never had to flee and could basically just crowd these places. So they were actually forcing the banks to crumble, which was exposing the roots of the trees more than they were supposed to be. And it was causing problems in the waters and they were ruining the vegetation because they were staying in one spot and never having to migrate. All these things were happening. They ended up reintroducing wolves back to the population and things like trees started to be healthier. You'd think, what does wolves have to do? It had to do with everything. It literally saved an ecosystem by putting the predator back in. The point is they removed something that was supposed to be there. And it ended up ruining the ecosystem. Well, how much more complicated is the human body? As crude as the analogy was from that Catholic speaker, she was basically saying, well, if a man needs to consult his doctor for Viagra, that's for a reason of something isn't working, and we're trying. That's what medicine is for, is to help things function. This was contraception is actually the opposite. Contraception is the opposite of medication. Contraception is like an unmedication. It actually makes the woman's body not function healthily. It causes a form. In older times, you would say it causes a sickness. Isn't that ironic? Well, we'll continue with this article here because this is about abortion specifically. The last thing. When they tested the original contraceptive pills on these poor women in Puerto Rico, there was a reason they could do that. It had something to do with it's not an actual state, but there was U.S. jurisdiction. But anyway, they weren't American citizens. There was a reason why they chose that place. They had the hormone levels so high that it actually stopped conception, but it ended up sterilizing most of the women and causing cancer. Imagine that. Again, you mess with the ecosystem, you make them sick. They realized they could have a relatively stable unmedication if they turned down the levels on the hormones, and it stopped implantation but not conception. So the problem is, though, they had to change the textbook. So just like they did with the DSM-5, which used to list homosexuality as a mental problem, they just changed it without any change in science, but just, you know, changed it for political reasons. They just changed the textbooks, and it went from conception to implantation. So this legislation is saying that an unborn child is an individual from fertilization. It's a pretty big deal. The legislation would prohibit abortion by making it a crime for any person in the state to administer, procure, or sell any instrument, medicine, drug, or any other substance, device, or means with the purpose to terminate the pregnancy of a woman, with knowledge that the termination by any of those means will, with reasonable likelihood, cause the death of the unborn child. That actually sounds like canon law, by the way. It's an automatic excommunication if you procure an abortion, a completed abortion. Notwithstanding any other provision of law to the contrary, no person shall purposefully perform or attempt the abortion to perform an abortion, the bill states. Legislation states that exceptions to Ohio's proposed abortion ban would be granted only to those whose assistance in an abortion was designed or intended to prevent the death of a pregnant mother, and the physician made reasonable medical efforts under the circumstances to preserve both the life of the mother and the life of the unborn child in a manner consistent with the conventional medical practice. It is unclear whether such an exception would include the delivery of pre-viable babies. Yeah, that's honestly one of the hardest ones to deal with. We had actually coming up in about 6 or 7 days, we have the anniversary of late-term miscarriage, losing an unborn child almost two-thirds through the pregnancy. It was a very tragic event. Basically, the baby had to be delivered. And that was a very hard experience because you realize that they use the same procedures for abortion. It's a very horrific thing. So that is a very good distinction in this, that they're actually including intent. This is a very well-written piece of legislation. Continues to say, supported by over half of Ohio's House Republicans, HB 480 is sponsored by Republican State Representatives Jenna Powell, Thomas Hall, as well as 33 Republican co-sponsors. Quote, the sanctity of human life, born and preborn, must be preserved in Ohio, said Representative Powell in a statement, adding that the bill, also known as the 2363 Act, because there's an estimated 2,363 children killed in America through abortion every day. That's a very meaningful name, is about protecting our fundamental constitutional right to be born and live. Abortion kills children, scars families, and harms women. We can and must do better. On the chamber floor, Powell affirmed that HB 480 is intentionally similar to the Texas pro-life law, noting that the Ohio bill utilizes the enforcement mechanism from the successful Texas Heartbeat Act, which empowers citizens to file civil lawsuits seeking $10,000 or more against anyone assisting in the procurement of an abortion except the pregnant mother. Going a step further than the Texas state law, which bans abortions after a fetal heartbeat can be detected, usually around 6 weeks, the Ohio bill would prohibit any abortion at any time during the pregnancy. The Ohio law does not set a benchmark for a legal abortion timeline, potentially leaving it open to encompass all abortions ranging from 1 week of pregnancy to the last trimester, the National Review stated. The bill will. The bill also explicitly bans chemical abortions, removing an option which was gained increasing popularity during the COVID-19 pandemic. Yeah, as physicians have mailed abortion drugs to expectant mothers, and currently accounts for some of 40% of U.S. abortion. That's a big deal. While the Biden administration has sought legal action against Texas for the heartbeat law, contending that it is settled constitutional law, a state may not prohibit any woman from making the ultimate decision to terminate her pregnancy before viability, Powell argued on the chamber floor that the 1973 Roe v. Wade decision legalizing abortion in the U.S. was based on precarious legal foundations. In an interview with Live Action, Powell explained that the Ohio bill is not the only one of its kind and is not exclusively based on the Texas law. According to Powell, the act is based off the Arkansas Unborn Child Protection Act, that's an interesting one, which was signed into law earlier this year, but we've made a couple of changes. The bill uses the enforcement language by the Texas Heartbeat Act, which has been upheld by the Fifth Circuit Court. She added, adding that Alabama, Louisiana, Arkansas, and Utah have recently passed similar pieces of legislation. You know, there's a, what are they calling it? Are they calling it a purple wave? What are they, or the blue wave? There's a wave coming of pro-life sentiment legislation. You know, as I said yesterday, with this whole climate science, COVID science stuff, you know, our masters are trying to control every single aspect of human life. I mean, they've had these devious plans for a really long time. They don't sound any different than the eugenicists and the proto-Marxists of the 1800s, let's call them. They don't sound any different, but now they just have the technological means to give it a shot. At least they think they do. So we're in a point now where they're trying to control everything, and they're pushing things really, really far. And I wrote an article for Catholic Family News. I think we're in the final stages of communism. That doesn't mean that I think tomorrow's going to be a happy-go-lucky day, although it is snowing outside plentifully right now. My children are very happy about that. They're going to make some snowballs and throw them at each other in the backyard tonight, I would imagine. That makes me happy. But we're in the final stages because this is the logical conclusion. Friend of the show, Jeffrey Tucker, who is going to be coming on, supposed to be tomorrow. He finally replied. I'm not sure if he's going to be coming on at 3 or 4. He hasn't said yes to that yet. But in any case, he tweeted today that the state has gone from a masochistic to a sadistic, or sadistic to masochistic, whichever one is you hurt yourself and you hurt others. Basically gone from trying to harm others to harm themselves. The state is eating itself alive right now. The state is harming itself. The state is doing to itself what it's caused people to do to themselves. That's the logic of this diabolism that we're living under. So it makes sense that we're seeing a reaction. As I said, as I'm oft to quote St. Paul, we're living through a time where the scripture comes alive, where it's the war between the principalities and dominions. The bill continues, it says, meanwhile, the writers of the Ohio legislation state that their authority to implement such a sweeping law defending the lives of the unborn derives from the language of the Declaration of Independence itself, citing the founding document by noting that all human beings are created equal and endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that to secure these rights, governments are instituted, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Based upon the language of the Declaration, the bill's sponsors argue that the legislature may define by law the scope of protections afforded by this section to unborn persons, and that, quote, any prohibition of conduct with regard to unborn persons shall be prescribed by the legislature by law. It remains to be seen whether the bill will ultimately become law in Ohio, with its success depending in large part upon the Supreme Court. On Monday, the United States' highest court convened to hear arguments in multiple cases that could determine the fate of the Texas Heartbeat Act and any similar legislation proposed or enacted in other states. Beginning December 1st, the Supreme Court is also set to hear arguments in the much-publicized Dobbs versus Jackson Women Health Organization case, which asks the court to rule on the constitutionality of abortion restrictions before viability. Crucial case has been closely watched by pro-life and pro-abortion advocates alike and has the potential to overturn Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey, to the two landmark cases which cemented a constitutional right to abortion in the United States. This is an exciting time to be alive. That's an exciting time to be alive. It really is a fascinating turn of events. On the one hand, we have the most egregious, overt, and obvious nonsensical regime craziness that you could ever imagine. Biden literally crapping himself, visiting the Pope, saying that a public abortion supporter should take Holy Communion. That's what we have on the one hand. On the other hand, we have the states really showing their gusto and doing things to protect the unborn, which we would have thought was a pipe dream a year and a half ago. You know, this might be one of the positives of being, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with Trump. Me and Jim Hale talked about that yesterday. Go to crusadechannel.com/upgrade if you don't have the Founders Pass Premium and can't listen. We don't know what's going to happen with Trump in the next election. But one of the defects, and I'm not a Trump hater, you know me, I have a fan overall. But one of the defects of the whole phenomenon is that, you know, he was the show. And the states were largely forgotten. Well, since Trump was dethroned by the regime, it seems pretty clear that the best hope for most of the stuff that affects your life is the state. Even with the vaccine mandate, the 100-person business vaccine mandate, your state can still protect you from that. I mean, you might say, well, they can't because OSHA is federal. Well, the reality is that the states are acting as if they can protect you from that. And it's time to call the federal government's bluff. What are they going to do? Send in the like a federal policing agency to force your employer to make sure that you put a needle in your arm? If even just 15 or 20 states stand their ground, they don't have the resources for that. It's a pretty fascinating time to be alive. The unborn might start winning more and more. You have to realize that this one case in Texas, it's still going to be debated, but it's precedent for what's going to come. Thankfully, it looks like right-wingers are finally waking up to how to actually punch the devil in the mouth in the way that he deserves to be punched. It's an exciting time. I told you I'd end on good news. Listen up after the break for some more best of your favorite afternoon radio show. This is the Kennedy Profession here on the Crusade Channel. This is the last live radio station standing.